I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. She has been described as a modern environmental hero. She's also dubbed controversial. She is, however, an effective campaigner. Zipporah Berman joins me now to discuss her new book, where she talks about her life and her work, This Crazy Time, Living Our Environmental Challenge. She's written the book with Mark Leiren Young. Zipporah Berman is Greenpeace International Climate and Energy Co-Director and is the founder of Forest Ethics and Power Up Canada. Her website is at zipporahberman.com. The book is published by Knopf. She's in Toronto this day promoting this book, but makes her home again here in Vancouver. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Zipporah Berman. Good morning, Ms. Berman.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. I want to start with something that I read in the book. I wanted to know how your fashion sense is. Are you still hip to fashion-wise? Harry Rosen once said of you that you were a bright light on Canada's fashion scene. I'm just wondering where we are with that.
That was a long time ago, but I have to admit, it is still a love and a passion of mine. And living in Europe for the last year, it was that was a super fun part for me.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about sort of the roots of your activism, the seeds of your environmentalism. Were they sown by your parents?
You know, I don't really think the environmentalism was. You know, it wasn't something that they worked on or talked about much, but definitely engaging in community, you know, volunteering in community, you know, being a part of community, being, you know, was always a part of our life. And, you know, we were taught to volunteer at the synagogue. We were always taught to give part of our allowance to tzedakah, which is charity, and so that kind of engagement was part of my life, and we would often, my mother was brought up in Lake of the Woods in Northern Ontario, and so we would go up there to visit my grandparents. My grandfather was a fisherman, and they lived right on the lake, and so I have a lot of great memories of those summers, and I think that's where I really found, love for the forest and being out in nature. But I didn't really, environmentalism for me didn't really happen until my early 20s.
Now, your parents died when you were young, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You grew up in Ontario?
I did, in London, Ontario, and then I did both of my degrees in Toronto.
Yeah, and then when did you come out here to B.C.?
The first time I came out to B.C. was in 1991, and I came out because I saw a picture of the temperate rainforest in a geography class, and I just thought, this is crazy. I don't know anything about Canada's temperate rainforest. You know, at that point, I was already interested in environmentalism. I was, following what was happening in Brazil, and I decided to come out and see for myself, and I ended up volunteering for the Western Canada Wilderness Committee, and that was in 1991, and I just fell in love with forests on Vancouver Island, and so I came back every summer until 1993, and then I moved to B.C.
What is it about people who come from elsewhere and then come to B.C. and then they just fall in love with the place? Hey, have you been able to explain it? I mean, you've been away for about a year or so. Was that one of the reasons why you came back? Was just the love of the area?
No question. I missed it. I mean, not just me, but my kids and my husband. And, what a great experience getting to live in Europe for a year. It was a fabulous experience. And there were lots of things that I loved about Amsterdam, living without a car for the four of us and, always being on our bikes. And, there's great things about Amsterdam. But we missed the space. We missed the wildness, the being able to just walk down to the beach or the forests. We really are so lucky in Canada, but especially in Vancouver. I mean, the city was planned incredibly well. It's just really, you're able, to get out and enjoy the natural environment in Vancouver in a way that you can't in most cities in the world.
In the book, you mentioned that this bungalow in Kits. You used to live there?
We haven't lived there yet, but we will be.
Yeah.
We will be moving in this year. It's not a bungalow anymore. We worked with our family to develop an eco-density passive solar home. So it's a triplex now. Three families will live there where one used to live. Our house is passive solar. It's fossil fuel free. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to build it, and we're really excited about it.
Was that expensive to do?
Well, I think anytime you build a house, it's expensive, and we're very lucky that we were able to do it because my in-laws invested in that property in Kitsilano 40 years ago. But the actual building of it passive solar was not more expensive because we just did trade-offs. You know, so when you build passive solar, you actually, what it means is you design the house so that you have the windows in the right place and the skylights in the right place to bring in maximum sun. And then there has to be something to hold the heat. So we did an interior rock wall in the house that's made from Squamish rock, and it looks quite beautiful, I think. And the floors are just polished concrete, and that rock holds the heat. But we needed to keep them polished concrete for the heat, but also we couldn't afford carpet or, you know, hardwood after that. You know, so we had to, there were some things we had to do trade-offs to do. We needed extra insulation and triple glazed windows in order for it to be a super efficient house. So that meant we couldn't spend as much on the cupboards or the counters or, you know, it's really the finishings that are so expensive when you're building a house. And so we made trade-offs, and no, we did it on a tight budget. It's an affordable house.
I'm sure people ask you how to live green, and that's, I guess, a piece of advice to give, right? You do make these trade-offs and the sort.
Yeah, I mean, we all make trade-offs every day, and one of the chapters in my book is about living green, and I think the first thing that we need to do, you know, if we're trying to have a lower footprint, is really ask, do we need it? You know, and can we be more efficient? And that's a principle, I think, that applies to, you know, our businesses, our industry, as well as our own lifestyle. You know, we waste an enormous amount of energy in our society. We buy too much. You know, I say in the book we have an overdeveloped consumption muscle and an underdeveloped civil engagement muscle. You know, our kids are going to the mall as a pastime. We have to really start thinking about what do we actually need and consuming less. That's true. But my book is not about how to change your lifestyle. It's about how to change our laws because, you know, we could all stop driving to work today and we could all get on bikes. The whole country could stop driving and Canada's pollutions and emissions would go up, not down, because the majority of our global warming pollution comes from heavy industry. We don't just need better laws in Canada, better light bulbs in Canada. We need better laws. And so what I do in the book is tell stories from the last 20 years of environmental campaigns in the hopes that I can inspire more people to engage in these issues.
In terms of our engagement, though, what have we done wrong? I mean, it seems to me that apathy seems to be the biggest problem.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, one is that the industry and government are very good at making it seem so complex that you have to be an expert in order to engage, you know, and making you feel like, you know, really what you should be doing is just buying different light bulbs. We'll take care of everything else. And you know, it's really not that complex. You know, we hear all the time, it's cap and trade, but only the auction, and it's carbon tax, and, you know, well, actually, yes, there's problems with the tar sands, but this is ethical oil, and, you know, the fact is, if we're polluting more today than we were yesterday, then it's not okay. If we're not supporting clean, safe, renewable energy systems in a time when we're facing peak oil, in a time when we know that climate change is one of the greatest challenges humanity has ever faced, then it's just not okay. And if the government is spending our money subsidizing big oil and coal companies instead of helping us build efficient and affordable transportation systems, it's not okay. And we need to be willing as individuals to stand up and to say that, because our politicians aren't going to pass the laws that we need until they know they have our support for doing tough things and until they know there are consequences for their inaction. So what this book is about is not about buying the right widget. It's about calling your politician. It's about joining the group in your community whose activities you like. It's not just about writing that check to Greenpeace. It's about joining the rally on Parliament Hill.
You know, there's a list in the back of the book of these books that you recommend that we pick up. Recommended reading, I think it's what it's called. There's about 25 books in there, or 23 or so. I think half of those books have been on this program when they came out. So
that's so great.
Yeah. So, I don't think of myself as left wing. I'm probably more to the right. But after reading your book, it made me think, and then looking at the list, that issues of the environment aren't necessarily anymore, they don't fit in that spectrum of left versus right anymore. And that's the thing that I came away from this book thinking about. That must frustrate you that if you're a member of Greenpeace, you're automatically branded left-wing.
Well, it depends what country you're in. You know, I work for Greenpeace International now, and I'm helping to coordinate campaigns in a lot of countries around the world. And in, you know, in a lot of countries, this work is not right or left. You know, it's not, if you know, whether or not we have clean air to breathe, whether or not our children have clean water to drink, you know, that's a family value. That's not something that's the purview of the right or the left. And around the world, we're actually seeing some of our biggest environmental champions, you know, from in the most surprising places. I mean, who would have thought Arnold Schwarzenegger would be the climate champion, you know, of the late 90s? Who would have thought that Andrea Merkel from Germany would be such a, you know, climate champion in a lot of ways? The point is that we have to give the right and the left the opportunity to do the right thing, and we have to make sure that these issues, you know, aren't seen as just belonging to one party, because we simply don't have time for that. I think we need to encourage everyone to engage, and we need to work with people from all walks of life, you know, even unlikely alliances, to make change.
And the parameters of the debate in this country, will those change anytime soon, do you think?
The parameters of the debate?
It's sort of, because it's still seen in this country as sort of a left-wing issue, the environment, isn't it?
I think increasingly not, actually. You know, when I started this work 20 years ago, it was very hard to get the attention of politicians. It was very, very difficult to get the attention of major corporations on these issues. And I don't think that's as true anymore. I think it's, you know, all the major corporations I talk to know that they have to address these issues. They have to be more socially responsible. They have to address environmental issues. You know, there's a saliency, a knowledge base on the issues that we didn't used to have. And I actually think that is, that, you know, that's a huge sign of hope. But more than that, what we're seeing now is that the marketplace is changing so quickly that whether you're on the right or the left, you're forced to start to look at these issues. And if we don't, you know, then Canada, for example, will just be left behind. I mean, last year, Europe decommissioned more coal and nuclear capacity than it built. You know, for the last 2 years running, new investment globally of renewable energy exceeded the combined investment of oil, coal, and nuclear. The world is changing. We are actually living a tipping point on energy issues, and you know, Canada will be forced to change by design or default. If we do it by design, and if we get ahead of the curve, then we'll benefit, and there'll be far less casualties.
The title of the book is This Crazy Time. It's also a critical time, I suppose. You mentioned earlier about some of the biggest challenges we face as a species. Climate change, energy consumption, those are the biggest, do you think, the most critical?
I think there is no question that the defining issue of our age is carbon. We've been treating the atmosphere like an ashtray for the last 20 years, and we know that the atmosphere can only hold so much. We have about 390 parts per million of carbon in our atmosphere right now, and we know that if we get to about 450, then climate change will skitter out of our control. We won't be able to slow it down. And the carbon that's stuck in our atmosphere right now is acting like a blanket. It's trapping heat, and that's changing the climate. We have a 50% increase in violent storms globally, you know, just since 1970. But honestly, you know, this is not a book about climate change. There are a lot of great books out there that will give you the facts that you need, and they will scare your socks off. You know, Flannery, Mambiot, our own, you know, Weaver and Jacquard. But I don't really care if people believe in climate change. I don't think you need to want to have safe, clean, sustainable energy systems that in the long run are cheaper. You know, we've done analysis of Canada's energy systems at Greenpeace through our energy revolution modeling, and we know that we'll save billions of dollars in Canada over the next 40 years if we move towards renewable energy systems. The technology today is there. You know, we have the capacity to make the change that we need. And I think that, in fact, you know, we're living a tipping point where we're actually going to see that change in our lifetimes.
And so what can we do as a citizen, say? I mean, do we have to elect better politicians, do you think, or just to get engaged, to get active?
Sure, it'd be good to elect better politicians. but I think that we have to hold all of our politicians to the same bar. We have to let them know that we care about these issues. I mean, when I started working on climate and energy issues, one of the most horrifying conversations I ever had was with someone in the Prime Minister's office, and they said to me, sure, Canadians care about these issues. They don't really understand them, and they're not really engaged, so we're doing enough. Well, that's not good enough. And in order for those politicians to feel like they have to do more or they want to do more, they need to know that we're engaged and that we'll support them when they do the right thing. I mean, the fact that, you know, people are dying, millions of people are dying in Somalia and Kenya, you know, they don't have access to clean drinking water, that 10 million people this year are starving because of the impacts of climate change on our food systems, and we're debating wind farms because we don't like them in our viewscape. Are you kidding me? Like, we have to support these initiatives, and I think that's hard. You know, change is hard, and it's far easier to talk about what you're against than what you're for. But it's time for us as individuals, as citizens, as environmental organizations to step up to the plate, to recognize carbon is a priority and building renewable energy systems is a priority, and to support it and get it done.
The book is as you said, stories of your life and the sort. And what I found refreshing is you talk about some of the regrets that you've had. What do you regret? I mean, there's a lot of stuff here. You were arrested. You were detained. You've had death threats. I mean, is there anything that you'd change about your life if you could?
Oh, sure. You know, I definitely made mistakes in the campaigns that I've helped run. I've learned as I've gone along. I think in the early days, you know, I really saw the tactics, the blockades in Clackwood Sound as kind of an end in and of themselves. You know, I hadn't really developed a strategy yet. You know, those. I think we would have been more successful quicker, for example, in Clackwood Sound, if we really tried to talk to and effectively lobbied the government, but we didn't. We talked to and negotiated, you know, with the government industry through the press. You know, we were very naive, and we had kind of one tool in our toolbox. And so, you know, if I had to go back and do it again, I think I would try and give decision makers the opportunity and the opening to do the right thing, maybe even a little quicker. Which doesn't mean that I don't think civil disobedience isn't important. I actually think that it's more important today than it was 20 years ago because the issues are more critical because it's so clear, especially in Canada, that our federal government is acting in the opposite direction by pushing forward with development in the tar sands, unregulated and polluting development in the tar sands. You know, so, you know, some things I would do differently. I think there's always things that you would do differently. I talk about a lot of them in the book. I mean, I really tried to pull back the curtain in this book and just talk about how I and the groups that I worked with made decisions as we ran these campaigns so that people could learn from that. And I hope, you know, it would inspire people to kind of leap in and try and design their own campaigns.
Is Clackwood what you're proudest of?
No. I would say if there's one thing that I'm really proudest of, you know, it would be, I think, the Great Barrier Reef Forest campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we started that campaign of the original 359 valleys on the west coast of Canada, there were only 69 left, and they were all slated to be roaded or logged within the next 5 to 10 years. And they're all intact today. Yeah. And not only that, but you know, we're developing a conservation-based economy on the coast. You know, we organized financing for, you know, First Nations-run businesses to diversify the economy so they weren't dependent on logging. It was, you know, it's not just about that agreement was not just about protecting places. It was transformative, both in the way that logging happens as well as, you know, in support for First Nations and local businesses. And, you know, and I'm definitely really proud of that.
Have you been gratified with the reviews of this book? I mean, there's one review that I read that one self-described cynic wrote that she was so taken by it that she was moved to tears.
In the Montreal Gazette?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. It was, you know, it was astonishing. It was, I've been really excited, you know, to read the reviews of the book so far. I mean, when you throw this much of your life out there and really open yourself up, it's pretty scary. And you know, but the reviews so far, you know, have been really good. People are really enjoying the book, and that's what I love too. And that's why, you know, I chose to work with Mark Lehren Young. He's a very funny man. He's an incredible writer,
yeah.
And you know, Mark's last book, Never Shoot a Stampede Queen, won the Stephen Leacock Award for humor.
Right.
And you know, and let's be clear, environmentalism can be depressing. Environmentalists, myself included, can be annoyingly dogmatic and self-righteous. And I really wanted to write a book that wasn't that, you know. I wanted to write a book that was stories and really inspired people with how incredible this work is and how satisfying and fun it can be. And I'm proud of what we achieved. I think we did that.
One last thing, Sipora. There was a story in the Georgia Strait where a couple weeks ago when the book first came out, you started the tour out here, that said that you'd consider political office. That's what you told them. Since that story came out a couple weeks ago, have you given it any more thought? Have you been approached by anyone, say?
No, I haven't been recently. I've been approached several times in the past by different parties. In fact, all three parties, I think, at different times in the last 10 years. But it's not in the cards right now for me. Maybe someday. You know, it would be a good experience, I think. I'd learn a lot, but I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now, working for Greenpeace International. I'm learning a lot, and I really want to focus on climate and energy issues. So I'm not ruling it out, but it's not in the cards right now.
I've enjoyed the conversation, and I'm enjoying the book. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it.
Thanks so much. It was nice to talk to you.
You're very welcome. The book is called This Crazy Time, Living Our Environmental Challenge. It's published by Knopf. SipporaBerman.com is the website. The author, Sipora Berman, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunder.